this is a good, there are going to be three parts to this Chaburah share. So I'm going to try to organize it this way, that tonight we'll do more of an introduction and try to get up to Manishtana, and then we'll go from Manishtana to Vihishamda, and then the last one we'll try to go from Vihishamda until the end. So we'll see how much we can cover in this time. So as an introduction, I find that the challenge of running a Seder comes in a few forms. First of all, maybe first and foremost, is that the crowd is by definition a diverse crowd. Even if it's just your family, it's your wife, who's intellectually your equal, and then your children, who are varied ages and varied levels of intelligence, but most importantly, varied levels of interest. And that's always the most tricky thing about running any Seder, is keeping people engaged and interested. It's not easy. And if you have guests, it gets even more complex. You know, you have guests that have different backgrounds, they may know more, may know less, and trying to keep the balance that you can really, you know, connect to everybody is not a very easy task. And you know, at times you may have guests that kind of take over the show, and then you have to shut them down. And it's a job, you have to understand that, you know, running a Seder is a job. It's a leadership role, and you have to treat it as such. But there are a few crucial things to pay attention to, and I think make a huge difference. The first and foremost, I find, is that a Seder has to be run b'simcha. And it's not an easy thing. Talking not an easy thing. It's first of all, the setting generally is that we come into the Seder tired, pretty stressed, overwhelmed, and we have to now, you know, lead a Seder for a couple of hours. It's not the easiest frame of mind to get into, number one. And number two, there's all kinds of expectations we have of ourselves, of our Seder, a picture in our mind, the way we'd like it to be, the way we'd like our children to behave, the way we'd like people to participate, and more often than not, reality doesn't live up to our expectations. So the kids don't behave, and the people schmooze about stupid things, and all kinds of, you know, whatever it is that changes the nature of how we would like our Seder to be, annoys us, and makes it harder for us to be b'simcha. But that is the priority. Priority number one is that is the biggest message your children will walk away with is how happy you were by the Seder and how much simcha you demonstrated being able to do this mitzvah, being able to have this precious, unique opportunity to relate to your family. If there's anything to walk away with, it's that. If we get angry, annoyed, and irritable, then that's what they'll walk away with. All the other messages of Amunah and Betachon, and that'll be second. I'm not saying they won't hear it, but it will be second. Number one will be how we lead the Seder. So that's why we have to prioritize it and recognize that if we're capable of doing that, even if the rest of the Seder didn't look the way we wanted it to, even if the children didn't behave, and even if, like, you know, things didn't quite work out the way we thought they would, if we were capable of doing that, we've actually accomplished a tremendous deal. It's a beautiful story. I've said it before. I love to share it. It's a beautiful story to say by a Seder also. There was a man who passed away in Bnei Brak, and at his Levaya, he had more than 130 of his tzatzayim, his children, grandchildren. You know, it was a huge, huge family. He was a Holocaust survivor himself. And his son got up to speak, and he said that his father had left specific instructions what to be said by his hesped. He had to tell this story. So the Nifter had been one of the sheres of Plata, and he had come after after Europe, had lost everyone. He didn't find a single person from his family or his friends, and he had nobody. He was just at that point going through the motions of life. He didn't really have any chias to him, any energy. He just was just living because he was alive. So he was an Eretz Yisrael, lived in Tel Aviv. He wasn't religious at that point, but he did like to attend Shabbos and Yom Tov, Sudas, and Minyanim, nostalgia. So at one Pesach night, he was in shul, and a young man who had a little child with him said, do you have a place to be tonight by the Seder? Would you like to come to my house? And he said yes. He was willing to come along. So he walked into this you know, very simple house, but it had a beautiful glow to it. And they said that the Seder table was set beautifully with wine and the dishes, and it was all wonderfully set. And he had a few little kids, and the kids started running around and got a little rambunctious. And one of them stepped on the edge of the tablecloth, and the whole tablecloth got pulled to the ground, and it did not go like the comics, you know, where everything is still standing. Everything went down with it. So the dishes shattered, the glasses shattered, the wine spilled. It was a terrible mess. And he said he like wished he was anywhere else in the world but there at that moment. And the children were like started crying, and the whole thing was trying to crumble. So he said the man stopped. And the father, the young father, took his child out and did it on his lap. And he said, listen, what should we do? We have two choices. We can sit here and feel bad. Or we can put our Seder back together. Will it be as pretty as before? Maybe not. But we can, we'll all be putting it back in some way. And maybe in the way we put it back, it'll be even nicer. So the little boy got down, he picked up a piece of a plate, another one picked up another piece, and they kind of reconstructed their Seder table, all broken, but he said he never, ever had such an experience of someone having such patience and such love and demonstrating such, you know, it's just simcha by Seder. Now this man turned out to be the Nesiv HaShalom. He was a young man at the time. And he became this person's rebbe, and he, you know, became a chassid and became religious as a result. But he said any time in his life that he was had a struggle with patience, he just thought back to that moment, and he was able to endure it. So it's a very powerful and everlasting message, how we lead our Seder and the kind of simcha we demonstrate. Simcha shel mitzvah, it's really one of the most important things we can give over. And knowing that helps us do it. That's number one. Number two is we need to try our hardest, and this is it's obvious, but it takes work, is to make our Seder engaging and participatory, not darshaning at the people. It's if you think about it, the Torah requires it. Right? The Torah says, V'hayki shalcha bincha machar. The Torah said, your son has to ask you. Chazal knocked themselves out to get the children to be interested and engaged, to ask. Kadesh Yishalu Atinekis. They made halachas, they made charoises, they made dipping, they made dinim, mitzvahs, drabanan, and there's tons of minhagim, all of them, just for the sake of getting the children engaged. They should want to ask, and we should be able to have a back and forth with them, and that's the way they'll truly have interest and be inspired. Every generation, this means something else. I'm not going to say, you know, the way my father led his Seder was more European style, but, you know, every generation knows what it means, what is necessary for their kids to be engaged. But you think about it. Think of the mitzvah of yachatz itself, right? You need a broken matzah because lachamayni, so the matzah you're supposed to take for lachamish is supposed to be broken matzah. Chazal could just say, take a broken matzah, right? They say, take two whole, and on Pesach, take one whole, one broken. Very straightforward. No, that's not what they said. They said, make a whole production out of it. You take three whole matzahs, then you break one, and then everybody figures out which one's the bigger half, and then you hide it away. And so they devised the Seder that, by definition, inspires in participation. That's what it is, and that's what we need to do our best to do that as well. And I'll try to, as we go along, try to give etzes and, you know, different ways that we can do that. Number three, interestingly, is be conscious of the time. That's an important thing. Chazal told us, according to some Rishonim, and it's quoted in Mishnah Berurah, that we need to be realistic in our expectations of our children. And according to one pshat, chaytfin matzah b'leil Pesach, which some say to mean you grab the afikaimen, others say chaytfin matzah means you get to the matzah quickly, because we can't expect our children to be able to stay up. And people think erroneously that k'dei shel yishnu atanaychis, the children shouldn't fall asleep, just means they should stay awake until manishtana. No, it means they should stay awake till matzah. that's the chinuch is with the matzah. If you don't get to the matzah, you kind of miss the boat. So it's a challenge, and it just means we should, you know, you don't have to, you shouldn't rush your Seder. No, it should never be rushed. But at the same time, one should be conscious of time and people's realistic expectations. But I saw the funniest thing this year, actually, in the Chasam Sofer and Drushes. He writes that he's talking about Amunah and Bias HaMashiach and the fact that Chakla B'chol Yom, we need to have patience and we shouldn't be Dechik HaSakeit. It's a whole topic about, you know, not pushing for Mashiach too much. I'm going to be speaking about it Be'ez Hashem over Pesach. But in the course of that, he says, one thing he says, Beremez, other thing he says very clearly, he says that, you know, you start off the Seder with 10 Simonim, Kaddish, Urchatz, right? That means your child who says them, because we all sing it, they say, one second, how many steps until we get to Shulchan Aruch? There's seven. Until you get to Shulchan, until we begin to eat, we're going to have to go through Kaddish, Urchatz, Yachatz, Magid, Rachza. You know, so they see, this is going to take a while. And he says, Chazal instituted that and said, the Seder takes a while, and that teaches our children patience, and this way they can learn how to wait for Mashiach. That's what he says. And you know what? It's not a bad message. It's not a bad message in itself. He said, this is bad. There's an end to it. Mashiach will also come. He is Meramez, and then his Rebbe, one of the Rebbeim with the Chasam Sefer was the Hafla. And Hafla had a brother, also a Rav. So he writes in a Sefer, and some people write this also. He says, when a Rav gives a drasha, and it's very long, and you don't even know what the Rav's talking about. He says a lot of times, he's talking about Topol, he can't even follow what the Rav's saying. He says, and it's long and it schleps. He says it inspires patience for waiting for Mashiach. Because it's going to end. At some point it ends, right? It doesn't go on forever. So he writes. Anyway, I laughed a lot when I saw that. So so there's any experience can be, therefore, utilize to teach a lesson. I think that's what I took from this. You can find even the things that are difficult also are there to teach something. Okay, so we start the Seder with the kittel. Why do we wear a kittel? Interestingly, not everybody wears a kittel. Most people wear a kittel, but not everybody wears a kittel. Those people who don't, the children get very annoyed at them because they come home. I had a friend, one of my friends in Los Angeles, he didn't wear a kittel, and his kids would come home and say, like, you know, enough already. You know, like, we're all different. Tyra, start with the kittel. Like, where's the... Anyway, so why do we wear a kittel? So the kittel, the Nesiv, I'm sorry, explains, and his son, Meir Berlin, and also Meir Bar-Ilan, he would say that the Nesiv would start his Seder with this every year. And he said the reason is because in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we ate the Karban Pesach. And when you eat the Karban Pesach, it's Achilas Kachim. And Achilas Kachim is Mishulchan Gavaya Kazachu, which means that we're eating from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's food. It's a Karban, right? It's Kadosh. It has Kedushas Haguf. Essentially, there's Me'ila, and you can only eat it because you did Zrikas Adam, and that's Matir. But even when we're eating it Mishulchan Gavaya. We're eating on Hashem's table. Literally, that's what it means. And if you're a guest at the table of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and you're eating a Kodesh Baruch Hu's food, that's Maichel Malachim. That's the way the Gemara says, you have to eat Kodshim Kedar Shah Malachim Eichlim. It can't be eaten simply, it has to be eaten properly cooked, and with spices, and with mustard, and whatever it is that makes the Geshmak, it has to be eaten royally. We're a guest at the table of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's why we wear a special garment, which is a, so to speak, a royal garment, a special garment, a unique garment, to demonstrate the chashivas of the night, the chashivas of us, and the chashivas of what we are about to do. Rav Matzio Zatzal said, I went once, and he was relating that the Queen of England, she would, I mean, I guess the king now, the hosts a garden party a couple of times a year, and 8,000 people attend. It's a huge event, but it's a tremendous covet in England to get invitation to a party like that. And people treasure that piece of paper. They got invited to the Queen's garden party. And he said that when he was in Gateshead, there was a simple tailor who lived there. And his son was a gadishtikel, influential in politics, and he knew his father would appreciate it, so he arranged that his father should get an invitation to the Queen's garden party. And he said he mamish framed it, and it was like his life's achievement. He said he had no half a mean of going. He couldn't afford to go. He had to get a tux, and, you know, you had to dress up. It wasn't the gear. He didn't have the money to be able to go, but he got an invitation to the garden party. So that's the concept of why we're wearing the kittel. We're demonstrating that we're here by the king's table. One year, I actually printed out an invitation to the Queen's garden party, what it looks like. I found it online, and I distributed it. So, you know, you could try to come up with this kind of etzes to make these things interesting. And he says as well that when the way we do, so to speak, the Karban Pesach b'zman hazeh is we eat matzah, right? And the matzah is in the place of our Karban Pesach. So then, when we're eating matzah, we should demonstrate how we eat it with that level of chashivas and importance. To understand what it is we're actually accomplishing. And the truth is that there are many parts of the Seder where it's crucial to emphasize this message that we are B'nai Melachim, that Klal Yisrael are Mamlechas Kayanim B'Goy Kaddish. We're a holy nation, we're a royal nation, we're representatives of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have the responsibility of being representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's stressed in many different places. One of them is they lived demonstrating that they were Jews, they dressed like they were Jews, they spoke like they were Jews. There's a lot of places you can bring this point out in the Haggadah, and I find with each passing year, it becomes more and more important. It's overwhelmingly strong, the culture now, how nobody is special. And everybody is equal and everybody is okay. And you can do the most abominable things and you also have a place in society. They even found a whole argument that Osama bin Laden was really, well, maybe he was really right, you know. So I mean, there's just so much of that now. And as Jews, we really believe that we are elite. And the reason, we're not exclusively elite, meaning anybody who chooses can be like us. But we are elite because we listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and because we have the Torah, and because we live a life like that. It makes us different. And it's very important to understand that, believe it, and be machshavit. It's a crucial understanding that what we are is unique and is special. So it's something to look for opportunities to bring out throughout the Seder. Now, Karpas, move on from Yachatz to Karpas. So this is one of the questions, obviously, of the Manishtana. Chazal were only metaken it in order that we should, the children should ask, why are we dipping? You do have to know the answer to that question. Why are we dipping, right? So that the answer to the question isn't so that you should ask, right? There is an answer. So there's many different answers to it, approaches to it. I heard this sharp vart once. I think I've said it in the past. There was a Yid who lived in Borough Park. He was known as Mendel the Coat Rack. That's what we used to call him. So he was he wasn't homeless really, but he kind of seemed homeless, smelled homeless, and he would wear like 17 coats. He was unfortunately not well. He was very, very paranoid. I had a friend whose parents were real tzaddikim. They would have him over, and like he would constantly be running outside, think people are following him. Anyway, he wasn't well. But he had a few sharp farts, retloch, that would go around. One of them was this. He said that on Rosh Hashanah we also dip, right? We dip the apple in the honey. It's a medic, but we dip the apple in the honey, and nobody asks, why are we dipping the apple in the honey? No, it says, Man Hashanah, Elazim Kol Lailos, why did we dip the apple in the honey? He says, when you're dipping in honey, nobody asks any questions. And things are geshmak, then you're asking questions. When it's in salt water and things are bitter, that's all. Oh, then we have a whole bunch of questions. So that's a message also that how a Yid has to live his life, and not only to question when things are going bad, we can equally question why things are going good, and recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us so much good. Anyway, that's his part. It's a cute part, but. Rav Shimon Schwab says, he said another thing, but there's a var also I mention every year, I think, one way or another. If I don't say it, my wife says it, by the Seder. Rav Atzio, this was one of his big things. He would say this every year. He'd give us this year, just about every year he would say this. And he would say that there are two dippings in the Seder, right? So you have the dipping of the karpas in salt water, and then there's the mara and charesis. He says there were two dippings in history as well. The first one was v'yipol es kutante badam. When they, Mechiris Yosef, they sold him and they took his baguette and they dipped it into blood. And the second dipping was when they brought the Karban Pesach, they dipped Agudas Ezev into blood also, and they put it on their doorways. And he says that it's what the Seder is coming to teach you with this, is that everything has a cause and an effect. The beginning of Galus Mitzrayim was from Beit Bos Ketan Tebedam, when they sold Joseph into slavery, they got him to Mitzrayim, and he brought everybody subsequently to Mitzrayim. There was a message in that. It was that pirud, that lack of achdus, that sinas chinam, that sinna, that brought about Galus. And ultimately, it's always what brings about Galus, when there's division amongst us, and there's sinna amongst us, when we can't reconcile, and there's a chisar and beit al-mukhavir, that's ultimately what's going to bring Galus. Even when Klal Yisrael did their greatest averus during Bayis Rishon, Mar points this out numerous times, that Achav was so successful and so powerful as a king, but he was Oved Avodah Zarah ad lahafli. He brought new levels of Avodah Zarah to Klal Yisrael, but they had peace, they had achdus, they had shalom, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's machshav that on above all else. And when that breaks down, that's when there's no patience anymore, and Klal Yisrael gets sent into Galus. So Galus began with the first dipping, and it ended with Agudas Ezev, which represents Aguda. You know, when Klal Yisrael was able to come back together, they were able to be mezache, they were able to come to join in the process of bringing a Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach itself represents Achdus. Chazal say that Klal Yisrael yotzim bePesach Echad. It's by nature a Karban that requires a Chabura. It requires that you have other people invited. You have to eat the whole thing. You can't break an etzem. You have to eat it quickly. You can't, very rare, very almost impossible for a person to do it on his own. So the nature of the carbon required that we bring other people together with us so that we can do the mitzvah biyachad. And that's what we're trying to move from the beginning of the Seder to the end of the Seder, from the first dipping to the second dipping, from the dipping that was a lack of achdus to a dipping that brought the cheres of Klal Yisrael and took us out of Mitzrayim. One other thing about Yachatz, also a nice vart I heard about from the Spinker Rebbe. He said that the two parts of the matzah represent us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we're separated to some degree. There's a separation between us because we're in Galus. But the two halves, they fit together, and they identify with each other. The two halves of one whole. And the reason why we keep both halves is to demonstrate that we have our half, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his half, and we never forget about each other. Kind of like, and I did this 1 year also, I bought, you know, those necklaces that they sell, the BFF necklaces, and like they're broken in half, one says BF, one says FF. So that's the concept, right? I bought one for all my kids. The concept is that we have one half, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the other half, so that we never do lose that connection between us and him. That's another thing that Yachatz represents, according to Spink Rabbit. Okay.